This is Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Conversations are taking place all over the country about the removal of Confederate statues and names, even in the military, where 10 Army bases are named after Confederate officers. Author Nicholas Bulardis recently wrote about growing up in Bakersfield in the 1970s and 80s and going to a high school steeped in Confederate symbolism. News director Alice Daniel spoke with him about his essay, which is published in the online magazine Boom California.
Nicholas Bulardis, welcome to Valley Edition. I'd like to start by asking you to read the section of your essay called A White Mythology.
Thank you for having me. I'm just going to jump right in. A White Mythology. Confederate and Civil War imagery surround me. It's 1982. I'm 14, a freshman at South High School. Home of the Rebels, the Blue and Gray, the Merrimack Yearbook, Johnny and Jody yell leaders in military-style gray uniforms and Confederate hats. Our mascot is a cartoon Confederate soldier. I don't understand what I'm seeing. I don't understand racism, slavery, war, who fought what or when and for what cause. I'm so caught up in our school spirit, I pin a tiny Confederate flag to a Confederate soldier hat my Mexican-American dad brings home from a swap meet. He thinks it's cool. I think this is what high school is all about. Rebel soldiers, like Star Wars, like The Empire Strikes Back. I don't realize a cartoon mascot is a symbol for retaining an economic system that allows for the horrific right to own slaves. I somehow think I'm one of the good guys. Street names around South High are all Civil War inspired. Sumter, Merrimack, Monitor, Rebel, Raider, Evelyn. Evelyn might be Evelyn Magruder Desjarnet, a white 19th century writer. She taught slave kids on a Virginia plantation. She culturally appropriated them by writing stories in slave dialect. Her husband was a captain for the Confederate Army, a farmer who owned slaves. Take a turn down white supremacist lane onto Monitor Street and you'll reach Plantation Avenue. An elementary school by the same name still stands there. So do the street names.
And you added the word supremacist to the essay. It's just called White Lane, correct?
Correct. You know, when you look at a map of that area, you can see all those street names, and it's really shocking. And you see White Lane. And White Lane, I don't necessarily think has anything to do with the Confederate names, but it's strange when you look at a map, it just jumps out at you.
And you end with the line that the school names and street names are still there. But what, if anything, has changed since then?
Well, really, nothing's changed since then. You know, this area was born out of the 1950s in city planning, and it's very sympathetic to this notion of Southern pride and Confederate imagery, a Confederate white mythology built into the fabric of a community. And since then, the street names are all still there. Plantation Elementary is still there. South High is still there. But the only thing that's really changed that I've seen is not only was the Confederate flag banned from South High's campus in 1968, but the mascot itself, the only thing that I've found that's changed is now it wears a baseball cap. But the same artwork is still there.
Well, in another section, you write that Black and brown kids lose their self-identity in this imagery. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
You know, I think that when communities aren't allowed to be themselves, then I think when you have something like this white superiority complex, it so permeates the culture they live in, the community they live in, it completely indoctrinates so many students, and this is in the thousands of students, Black and brown, who've gone to South High, who've gone to Plantation Elementary School. And so I feel like there's a part of people that gets taken away from them, from that experience.
And you write about that experience from a personal perspective too. You're 14, the mascot is a cartoon Confederate soldier, and meanwhile, your dad, who is Mexican-American, is giving you a Confederate hat to wear. And we learn, as we read in the rest of the essay, he's also kind of preaching whiteness, telling you you're white. Talk a little bit about him and how your relationship with him changed over the years.
Well, you know, my dad, you know, just like South High and Plantation and all those street names popping up in the 1950s, And my dad was a teenager in the 1950s in San Jose, California, and he lived at a time when this romanticization was happening in America of Southern pride, which also happened in California. It happened in places like San Jose, California, too, which we know nowadays, like Bakersfield, is a place that has a huge number of Latinos and Blacks. And so, but during that time in the 1950s, you know, my dad had odds stacked against him to assimilate, this idea of total and complete assimilation. So, you know, I think that my dad was kind of a victim of that, but, and I obviously don't like how that turned out with my dad, because I think once he joined the San Jose State Police Academy as one of the only Latinos there, I think that, well, let's look back to the 1960s now, early 60s, how can he not be indoctrinated into this sort of, you know, white mythology? How can he not be assimilated? Now, later on in life, you know, part of the good story about this is, you know, later on in life, my dad was, he didn't have those same racist views. I was really glad that he didn't. But once again, you know, these are all really complex issues. And I think we as people of the Central Valley have to admit to ourselves how really complex our families are. The issues of racism and race are in our own families. And so, you know, I think we have these long story arcs of our own, and they just get really complex.
Well, I was wondering how his proximity to whiteness and telling you you're white informed your relationship with African Americans as a kid.
You know, it's really sad in how it informed my relationship, because on one hand, I had my dad saying, you know, using racial epithets that, you know, weren't good to use, obviously, and saying things like, you need to be afraid of people of color. Now, come on, I mean, growing up in a home that's dual ethnic, my dad is a person of color with really, really dark brown skin, and he's telling me to be afraid of people of color. So that, you know, that informed me in a way that made me afraid. But at the same time, you know, you grow up, you learn things for your own. You learn that you can have black and brown friends and not have to be afraid of people, that kids sometimes are smarter than the adults around them and can figure things out and say, yeah, you know, my dad's just kind of wrong about these things. And of course, you know, it also took me years to reeducate myself, because that wasn't going to come from the home. It was going to come from myself educating myself and going to college and becoming a history major like I did, and going to graduate school in history and just learning on my own that I don't have to be what my father tried to make me to be.
And monuments are coming down all over the country. Names are being changed. Is this a conversation you're hoping to start in Bakersfield with this essay?
Well, it's time for change, don't you think? I mean, that's it's happening all over California, this discussion of monuments. And in Bakersfield, you know, there's a couple of plaques that are Confederate monuments. But what's staring people in the face in that community is what I bring up in the essay, is you have these schools that have these names like Plantation, that, and you have these Confederate streets named street signs. You know, those kinds of things need to be part of the conversation too. You know, why not name the school after a black doctor or a black teacher, a Latina labor leader? Build a necessary and new kind of community pride. And because, like I said earlier, literally thousands and thousands of kids are going to these schools, and they are just learning to accept sort of like this Gone with the Wind image of Plantation. When we know, if we as Americans are looking at our history, that is a candy-coated image. The real image is that Plantation's built on a slave economy. And slaves were oh my goodness, were emancipated. And to have that imagery now, in 2020, it's just not acceptable. So, you know, it's time for change.
Well, Nicholas Belardis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.